Welcome back to part two of our interview with Brian Shoemaker, Principal Consultant at Shoebar Associates, and Nancy Van Schuwendevert, Consultant at Lean Agile Partners, who are both presenting at Agile Development for Healthcare, taking place on the 16th and 17th of October in Berlin, Germany. You're both very welcome back. How can an organization best document for design control? Nancy, perhaps you might give us your answer on that.
You know, documentation is one of these things also that especially developers and engineers tend to dislike doing. Let's just be honest about that. They see it as a drag on getting the real work done. The challenge I set for myself early with my first Agile team was I'm a big believer in documentation because, you know, I often have to do enhancements to things I designed earlier. So I wanted to document in a way that was going to be so efficient and so brief that my developers would willingly keep going with it and do it. What I did was I made a strong distinction between two kinds of documentation. One is bona fide contract deliverables, like a user manual, like installation guides, troubleshooting manuals, things like that. Now, those are just deliverables, and you should handle them the same way Agile handles any other requirement. Do the early ones first, and then try to, if at all possible, observe people using it and keep on improving it so that it is usable. Now, that's not usually possible for a software team, but businesses would do well if they made it possible. So that's one path. The other path is the documentation that you're using internally. It's up to you how you structure that. For that kind of documentation, the main goal of that is to help you stay out of your own way, help you not lose the plot for what you're doing, especially if it's done across multiple people or teams. And what I do there is I say to managers, look, do a little survey for each document or each section of documents that you think no one's using. Find out, are there any users for this? We were planning to do away with it, you could even say. or you might even drop some areas and see what you find out. So when you're on that pathway and the goal is to just make your documentation usable, you find that developers can write it for the use of themselves and other people with their same experience. That makes it a lot shorter. We also combine diagrams and, you know, the traditional types of charts that you use in software development, UML diagrams and so forth. But coming back to safety critical things, because we build our automated tests, much of the traceability gets put in there automatically. Why don't I let Brian say a little bit about that too?
Yes. One of the things that I've been impressed by in the Agile area is they've been willing to start with lists of what they call stories, and a list of stories is what they call a backlog. But developers, when they start any given chunk of work, an iteration, need to meet with the people who have given these stories and refine them. They'll say, okay, you've given me this high-level description. Well, what would that actually look like? How would that, you know, how would that work in if you're actually using this system? And from a more general, somewhat hazy description, they come out with a very specifically defined goal that they need to develop to. There's a requirement. So why not capture those in the process of doing that refinement? And if you then have a series of iterations, sprints or whatever you want to call them, in which you've done this refinement of those stories into actual implementable things, and you capture them, written them down, you're doing the work anyway, you get down to the point of you've got a product because you've implemented all those things, you've got a requirements document. The same holds true for any of the other pieces that need to be generated. You need to do a test? Well, one of the key points is the test-driven development, which is a practice that many of these teams use. They develop a test against a series of requirements. So the documentation can be something which grows out of the process rather than being used as an input to drive the process.
Thank you. Can I maybe move you on a little bit, Brian, and ask you to tell us how to fit a hazard analysis into the development model?
That's one of the most beautiful questions that has ever come along, because if you read the hazard management document, in effect, it says you shall do your hazard analysis early and often. So in the course of refining requirements, we're going to be refining what we understand to be hazards at the same time. And we can be building in tests which mock up those hazards in many cases and be building that into our testing process at the same time. And we can be documenting what we've considered as risks. So it can be a starting point. It can be an iterative process, and it can be, and the whole risk management can be an outcome of a process just the way that the requirements analysis is.
Nancy, would you like to perhaps give us some tips on how to achieve complete documentation as an output of the process?
Sure. There's nothing in the FDA regulations that says you can't incrementally build your documents as you go. You can, you know, we say we use stories. These are scenario descriptions from the user's customer standpoint. And that helps us close the loop completely to make sure the whole behavior of the product suits the customer. But you don't necessarily have all of those totally defined when you begin. And if you do your development in stages, then you can build your requirements document, your test document as you go. You can build them almost like in chapters. Every iteration, you'd fill in another chapter of these documents. And people are doing this now. This is not against anything in the regulatory commandments. But, you know, quite a few companies still seem to think it is. They still seem to believe that these documents must be complete before you begin any work, and it's just not true.
And can I ask both of you to give us some practical examples of results that some teams have achieved through using the methodologies that we've just spoken about? Brian, can I start with you, please?
Yeah, I have a report here from another team that did some work in the Chicago area where in comparing two projects, one done by an agile methodology and one done by a traditional waterfall methodology, they estimated their schedule and team size were smaller on the agile project by 20 to 30%, and they had cost savings of 35 to 50%. I mean, those are rough estimates because you can never compare two projects exactly the same way. But those are the kinds of savings that have been seen in some teams. I think Nancy has some hard evidence from another previous project of hers, GMS.
Well, sure. The project that I mentioned a few minutes ago, that was a very early Agile project. My team and I were really interested to have data, though. We wanted to understand where our efforts were going and what the results were because, as I mentioned, we invested in being able to prevent defects, and then we wanted to know how well we were doing. So we did a root cause analysis on every defect that we found, and as we understood them, we beefed up our layers of defenses. We made sure that a bug of that type couldn't happen again in our software. And so, you know, when I mentioned that, I said, in the whole 3 years of development, there had only been 50-some defects. Those were measured after integration time, and they included any undesirable behavior. There wasn't really any politics going on about how you classify a bug. So we established those statistics. We could, you know, I can also say that during that entire development, there was only we had an open defects list that never had more than two items on it. So that's another result. What I've seen with the teams that I've coached well for almost 10 years now as a consultant, many dozens of teams, and it's very common that even if they have started a project the traditional way and then decide to change to agile methods, they can usually finish the whole project in about half of the time they thought it was going to take them to finish. That's very common. It's also very common that they see something close to a doubling of their productivity in the first few months. And this is because they're able to measure their productivity by the estimation technique that we use in Agile. And I'm referring to a technique called story points. Lots of people are very confused about that, and it's something that I clear up right away when I first start coaching a team. Anyway, so the practical benefits, I would just like to give you a few numbers because some people who are interested in software statistics will understand these. People look at data from Capers-Jones about function points and defect densities. My early Agilene achieved a defect density of 0.2, and that's defects per function point, defect injection rate. Other software teams have gone even better, and they've achieved as far, something like 0.4 was reported.
0.4.
Yeah, 0.04, sorry, from a BMC software, and that was reported in, by Cutter IT Journal. And also another team, Follett Software, was reported too to have even lower defect. And these were small teams using agile practices and improving as they go. So if you can just inject fewer bugs, if you only do that, you get a huge productivity increase because most software teams are spending somewhere between a third and a half. And I'm not going to say just software, like development teams. They're spending between a third and a half of their time just fixing defects, hunting them down, solving them, and fixing them. And you can eliminate nearly all of that.
Nancy, thanks so much for that. And Brian and Nancy, the work you've been doing sounds remarkable. And I'd really like to thank you both for sharing all your experiences and best practices with us today. And we really look forward to hearing you both speak at the Agile Software Development for Healthcare Conference, which is taking place in Berlin between the 16th and 17th of October. And that's Brian Shoemaker, Principal Consultant of Schubauer Associates, and Nancy Vashuendevert, President of Lean Agile Partners Incorporated. Thank you so much for your time and participation today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Neve.